From the front lines.
It's not going to work, man.
From the tailgates. Representing KGYR and its stakeholders, we are the Forum for the Fans, the Bleed Blue Show. Flying solo, here's your host, Steve.
Yeah, we are the Forum for the Fans, the Bleed Blue Show. This is the Ring Podcast with Ranger Proud. Conclusion of the blue shirt season, no longer intact. So we're going to discuss lightly. This will not be a long episode at all, of course, because we will get into the expansion draft, NHL draft, all the off-season stuff, free agency, in the summer to come, you know, in the 2021 summer. But as far as what happened in Boston, the very last game, they showed a little bit of guts. They fought through, and they played with a good effort. And they were able to get 2 points, but it was too little, too late. The Rangers do not make the playoffs within their own division. But the bigger thing was what dropped last week when we talked with RP, we talked with Glenn about the NHL lack of discipline, the Tom Wilson fiasco, the Rangers statement. All this ties into an interesting 55 games. For the blue shirts, who do not make the playoffs, it was tough division to begin with. It would have been hard to deal with anyway. But even with Jim Dolan getting rid of John Davidson, getting rid of Gorton, so the deal is, you know, replacing them with Chris Drury at the helm. What is the plans? The big question is. And I said it last week, and I think it's Captain Obvious shit, as far as David Quinn. Is his job safe? Is Chris Drury going to move on and get another coach, or are we going to stay with that? So let's talk with this. Let's see what's up. Glenn, what's going on, man? We won't be long on here. We say we will reevaluate the season in one big swoosh, and let's talk about it, man. How's everything, bro? How's everything?
I'm good, Steve. A lot happened since we talked last. Looked like we were just kind of getting to the end of the season, and then all kind of bombs hit again. But you're right. You know, they showed some spunk that last game. Bruins needed that game. You know, I thought they did a great job of, you know, fighting back and scoring those quick goals to get ahead and holding on ultimately. And, you know, I mean, they could have easily mailed it in that last game, especially having lost five and, you know, everything happened with the management change and the Wilson thing and being eliminated from the playoffs. But, you know, they pulled it together in that last game and you know, showed some spunk. So we kind of went out kind of Ranger proud, I guess, to end the season, right?
Right, exactly. And I can't say but to say this multiple times, Glenn. Had the Rangers did not do what they did on the ice versus Washington, I don't know if I could be able to still be a Rangers fan if they would have went out like punks, if they would have not have retaliated despite the NHL's lack of discipline. That's really – There's some lines you just don't draw as a franchise to your fan base, and you had to do something. I know it doesn't seem like the politically correct thing to do. I thought the Rangers made a lot of blue shirt fans proud, Glenn, stepping up for themselves because the NHL didn't step in. All the crazy fights that happened early on in the game, and I think the blue shirts. They already had the respect of the fans, but the really get it. They really got more of it, if you ask me. So a fan like me, especially, to fight back, literally fight back, they had to in that type of environment and type of that thing. Hold on, Glenn. Let's see something. Who's calling from Skype? Who's this? Let's see who's checking in from Skype.
Well, good evening, Steve. Is this my maiden voyage to the Ranger Podcast? I think it might be.
Oh, what's up, man? Carl, what up, man? Carl, this is Glenn with us. Glenn, this is Carl. Shout out to Carl, man.
Hey, Carl, how you doing?
Pleasant evening, Glenn. How are you?
Yeah, man.
I'm fighting my
what's your thought on hockey, man?
Sure.
Yeah, Carl, yeah, what is your thoughts, man, on what happened with the Rangers all season? I don't even know your opinion on this. And then Glenn can fire away after that.
You know, this it might have been the most it's a cross between interesting and somewhat disappointing. I have to be honest when I saw the games this season. You know, about five games into the season, something just didn't look right. And I had an inkling of what I thought I was seeing, and it sort of played out as the year went along. What the expectation should have been, I don't really know the answer to that question. But it probably leads to a much larger discussion about what happened last week in terms of the managerial changeup, because I think that I could see where the change and the impetus for change came from. We could discuss that in greater term later on. But as far as everything else goes, I mean, what happened on Wednesday in terms of the retaliation with after Wilson's hit on that Monday night, listen, they had to do something because there wasn't any other option. That's basically how I looked at it. You know, if they were not playing a home game that Wednesday, I wonder if the response would have been different. If they were in Washington that instead of at the Garden, I wonder what the response would have been. I felt like because it was the last home game of the season, because of what had happened on Monday, that the Rangers were forced into that position that they never really should have been had Tom Wilson simply been suspended immediately.
All right, Glenn, what's your thoughts? We'll go back to that as far as a week ago, because this all ties into the season, and Carl makes great points as far as how the season started. It started all slow, and he never really recovered. Anything else, Glenn? We could bring out the entire season in this 55-game schedule.
Yeah, just quickly, I mean, that's a good point that I hadn't thought of that Carl brought up. If that game was in Washington, would that same thing have happened? That's a very good point, and I hadn't really thought of that. But I think it was something that they had to do. You know, I mean, they kind of went back to 80s and 90s hockey where you used to see that sometimes where, you know, as soon as the puck drops, so do the gloves. And I think that was something that they had to do. And I was impressed that, you know, even without some of their tougher guys in the lineup, like you'd say maybe Kreider or Trouba, or that, you know, they went out there and you know, they basically said they weren't going to stand for that. And, you know, I think it was interesting, too, that Peter Laviolette was smarter than the NHL and decided that when Wilson went out that he'd be out for the rest of the game with a mysterious upper body injury. So I think Laviolette realized that the best thing we can do here is just get him out of the game, calm things down, and just forget it, which is what the NHL should have done. They should have given him a one-game suspension for that one game, and maybe some of that would have been avoided. But because it's also, if he was suspended, I wonder if there also would have been that reaction if he wasn't on the ice. So, you know, who knows? But so much for that. I was happy that they did what they did and stood up for themselves, and I thought that was, you know, something that they had to do. As far as the season goes, you know, it's interesting. I go back to after the Carolina kind of mini-series in the bubble last year, and I remember at the end of the season, JD said that we have to be tougher to play against. And I think we all agreed with that. And I think maybe at the time, you know, they fit Lemieux under the cap. They had some cap issues because of the some of the buyout money, dead money and everything. And I thought, you know, they figured probably they can get through this season with that and then try to do something else. And then obviously Lemieux didn't work out. And I wonder, you know, what they're going to do now. The Eichel rumors aside that have started up again. But I wonder what they're going to do now, because, you know, you got guys in the league like Evander Kane, Wilson, Marchand, if you want to, you know, throw him in there. There aren't a lot of those guys. You know, and they're not easy to get. So, you know, I think they're looking more at like a second-tier kind of guys. You know, a Blake Coleman, a Maroon, an Alex Killorn, a Goudreau, somebody like that. You look at Carolina, and I was looking before we came on here at the rosters of a lot of the top teams. a lot of the top teams don't have a Tom Wilson type guy, but they do have some guys that play hard, play physical, and just have that kind of mentality. And I wonder if, you know, that's what they need, not to go after somebody, you know, like a Lemieux, like a Ryan Reeves, like somebody who's going to be the sheriff in town, who's going to take care of everything. I mean, I think, you know, they got a couple of guys that can play that hard style, like Trouba. I mean, Kreider, don't get me started with Kreider, but he's one of those guys that should be able to play like that. Lindgren is a guy who plays like that. Morgan Barron has to fill in a little bit, but he says he, you know, he wants to bring a physicality. I don't know how soon we're going to see Brendan Schneider, the defenseman who's been, you know, compared to a young Bugaboo. So it's going to be interesting to see what Drury does as far as addressing that toughness, if he's going to, you know, try to get those lesser talented but guys that have a little bit of talent you know, you can fit in there, maybe even on the power play. I mean, Kalorn plays on the power play for Tampa. You know, somebody like Wayne Simmons used to be. Or if he's going to go another way where, you know, something like the Islanders, where you go out and get, you know, a guy like Cizikas, Martin, and Clutterbuck and have a whole line of those kind of guys that not only, you know, will stand up and hit hard and play hard, but also create a lot of havoc. A lot of times Trotz puts them out for the opening faceoff, you know. And, you know, if you look at the Islanders, that with Lou Lamoriello, that goes back to the old Halik McKay-Peluso line. And that's obviously his kind of philosophy of how to go about it. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see what Dolan makes Drury do and what Drury does. Part of me is a little worried about Dolan and his cigar-chomping buddy who has his ear. I'm hoping that, you know, I think Drury is going to be great. It's unfortunate that he had to come into this position under the circumstances that he did. Some of it may have been the fact that, you know, there were teams looking to talk to him, and maybe Sander was worried that he was going to take one of those positions and leave the organization, so he made the move he did. I don't know. There's a bunch of things that it could have been going on in Dolan's head. I think it's been
Glenn, not to cut you off. I'm glad you brought up these points, because this is where I wanted to drill into the situation with you and Carl. So do you think that's what this is, or a lot of it is where Drury may have been entertained by other franchises to be to lead the charge for Durrell's organization? Because that's why I wanted to ask you guys, like, what was the real driver behind Dolan getting rid of Gordon and Davidson? That I still don't know the answer to that. I can't find anything that supports, you know, theories or anything. Everything's speculation. What do you think, Glenn? And then we'll go to Carl. And then we could address the type of players Drury would like to address. But I would like to address this. What really pulled the trigger for Dolan? Why? What? I mean, what was really behind that? I'm not buying this, you know, because the Rangers didn't make the playoffs crap. I'm not buying that at all. But what do you think, Glenn? I mean, you made a good point about Drury possibly going to another franchise. What other things in your mind, Glenn? And we'll go back to Carl on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, Drury turned down a couple of interviews last year, one specifically with Pittsburgh, and I think there were a couple of others that teams wanted to talk to him, and he either did an initial interview and then took himself out of it or just declined to interview at all. I know he was very highly looked upon in the organization and around the league, you know, as far as a top-flight hockey mind and a guy who's going to be a fantastic executive. I don't know if that was something that went on in Dolan's mind. I'm not sure what conversations went on between Dolan and JD and Gordon. I mean, because JD said at the end of last year, we need to be harder to play against. And I can't imagine that two guys like JD and Gordon, who know how to win in the NHL, weren't going to address that this season, this offseason. You know, I think there were some constraints with the salary cap that I believe they've got about $10 million now that cap space going into this offseason. So I don't know what the impatience was of Dolan. I hope, and Steve, I mean, I know you're a Knicks fan, mm-hmm. and I'm sure you're not a big fan of Dolan on the Knicks side. And, you know, when people used to tell me that, oh, man, Dolan, you know, like the worst owner in the league. And I'm like, no, I don't. That's the Knick Dolan. The Ranger Dolan is the best owner I can have. Sign the checks and ignore the team. That's perfect. That's what I want. And now that he's pulled a Knick thing where, you know, I mean,
you're coming around?
Out of nowhere. I mean,
are you coming around?
Yeah, I mean, oh, man, yeah. My worst nightmare. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know if some of it was Sather. I mean, you know what Dolan thinks of Sather. And to be honest with you, I don't know why. If Dolan was impatient with the progress of the rebuild and declared it over, well, why wasn't he impatient with the progress of Sather when he first got here when he made the playoffs for 6 years? I mean, you know, that wasn't too great either. But I am still confused about what prompted that move, whether it was Sather, whether it was something with Dolan, conversations with J.D. and Gordon that he didn't like. I mean, I've heard that J.D. and Gordon were really trying to preach patience. And, you know, I mean, the timing of it is a little suspect, coming right after the Tom Wilson thing and right after the two mm-hmm. Islander games where we were kind of pushed around a lot. So when Dolan said, you know, I've been thinking about it for 20 or 25 games, I mean, I don't know, Steve. Were you thinking about it for 20, 25 games? I wasn't. So I don't know what is going on in that guy's mind. And to be honest with you, this is all I want Dolan doing in that building. I want him to go down to Penn Station at rush hour, play his stupid guitar, and pass around his goofy hat for tips. That's all I want him doing in that building. And sign the checks. That's it. I don't want him getting mm-hmm. involved in this team. I don't want to see us moving kids for you know, Eichel, who I don't want, or, you know, for some other guys, tougher guys around the league or something. I'm all in on this rebuild. I think it's been going, now, I don't know if Carl agrees, but, you know, I think it's where I expected it to be at this point, and that now next year, yeah, we got to make the playoffs. Next year, there's no excuses. And I'm with you, Steve. I am still confused about what was going on in his head. I've thought of a bunch of things. I don't know which one or which couple it was, but I don't think we'll ever know. I'm just trying to put my faith that Drury is running the team and not say they're a Dolan. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, let's try to figure this out. Carl, what is your thoughts on this? What is the real reason why Gordon and Davidson were outs like that? Is it the timing? Was it the Washington situation? Was it the Rangers statement on social media? Or was it the Chris Drury theory maybe going to another team? Or was it all the publicity the Rangers were catching from national media of how embarrassing it was getting thrown around in fights? I mean, what is your thoughts on this? What is the real reason you think why it happened for Gordon and Davidson?
So there's a lot of things here in terms of that, but I did wanted to hit on before I get to that, because I think I might know the reason behind it. But I wanted to hit on something Glenn mentioned about what was said after the Carolina play-in series. That's actually something I had been thinking about in my head, that I kind of kept a note of it in August when it happened. And then when I saw the season play out, that's when I started putting a couple of those things together, because the whole tougher to play against thing was something that was in my mind watching those three mm-hmm. games, because they were getting pushed around. Their airspace was being taken away. What I mean by that is basically not being able to use their skill to go up and down the ice. Carolina basically said, nope, that's not happening. And at that point, mm-hmm. when that was going on, there was no plan B of, okay, what can we do to counteract this? And if you fast forward that moment in those three games in August to the season that we saw, a lot of those same things still happened. Mm-hmm. There was no pushback. They were getting pushed around. When the good teams, the Pittsburgh, the Islanders, the Bruins, the Penguins, when they would take away the Rangers' airspace, there seemed to be no answer for that in any mm-hmm. fashion at all. And you had to ask yourself the question, okay, well, wait a second now. We just had about 5 months of space between that and this. and this is still going on, and there seems to be no response. Is there no response because the team does not have the ability to respond, or did management think that this was just going to correct itself on its own? And I don't know the answer to that question. If the answer is we thought it was going to correct itself, clearly they were wrong. And if the answer is, well, the players were going to eventually figure it out themselves, well, even then, that was wrong. So in both counts, both parts were wrong, and it led to eventually them not making the playoffs. I mean, I can't. Well, the games against Buffalo and New Jersey, please, I'm sorry. I just, those games were literally unwatchable hockey games for the most part. When I saw them face the top four teams in their division, basically the same games for the most part. You know, they think they played them, what, 7-8 times each, 32 times. You know, in about 20 of those games, it seemed to look exactly the same. So that, from a roster construction issue, that and a philosophical issue, if that's what the team, what they were looking for, and those are the results, then something is amiss. But it did lead to the part about, okay, well, why did JD and why are Gordon not with the Rangers anymore? And I thought about this question because I think the question that Dolan might have asked himself, I don't know if he specifically asked it, but I thought about this. So, and I was doing some research on this. So there's been 15 seasons since the NHL went to a hard salary cap. And in those 15 seasons, the Stanley Cup has been won 8 times by 3 teams, which basically tells you that parity in rebuilding in the way you think of it, there's an old school version of rebuilding, and then there is what rebuilding is in the hard salary cap era. There's only two sports that have this, the NHL and the NFL. Those are the, everybody else, they're kind of playing around with the money. But those two sports where there's finite dollars and you basically have to get maximum production from players at low cost. And so when you look at it from that standpoint, the question that I ask myself is, okay, and maybe Dolan asked this question, because I'm going to go on at two examples in a second. In a hard salary cap league, if you're rebuilding, what is a fair expectation of progress, and when should tangible results be expected? Like, when should you go from point A to point B to point C, if you even get to point B or point C? Point A being you're starting from the beginning, point B being you are eventually in the playoffs. You may not be a contender, but you're just there. And then point C being you are a serious championship contender. I don't even know if the Rangers are even at point B yet, 3 years into all this. And I think Dolan had to ask himself that question because the only difference between the division last year and this year is that Boston was swapped out for Carolina. That's really the difference. So even if there was a normal season, would the Rangers have made the playoffs? The answer probably is no. And if that's the case, wait a second. Because you look at the two examples that I'm going to use from this hard cap era, Pittsburgh and Chicago. They have 5 of the titles, right? The 6 main players from those rosters, if you look at how their rebuilding went, it started at point A, they missed the playoffs. The next year, they got to the playoffs. The next year, they either got to the Cup or won the Cup. Within 3 years, it's basically how it played out. The Rangers are 3 years into this process right now, and we're just talking about potentially making the playoffs. And that is in a context where 3 or 4 of the Ranger players are taking up 44% of the salary cap. So by the time those guys get to 31, 32, and still taking up this money, where are the returns coming from? And I think Dolan, if he asked this question, I'm glad he had to ask it, because that question has to be answered. And I think executives in both sports, the NFL and the NHL, do not want to answer that question as far as what is the timeline I should expect for a rebuild if you are being successful.
Mm-hmm. Those are all fair points, all fair points.
Yep.
Let's dive into that. Because, Carl, I don't know if you know, but Glenn brought up a great point maybe about 3 weeks ago as far as maximizing players on your roster, like, for instance, on your top 6, meaning, like, Glenn brought up the great point about Ryan Strome. At that time, he was one of the leading second-line centers in the entire NHL. you know, as far as getting point production. I think, okay, I'll put it like this. There's a lot of other factors as well. The Tony D'Angelo situation. I don't know where the owner stands on that. I never even heard anybody talk about, because, you know, you don't really hear, you know, Dolan talk about any of the stuff with the personnel. It's kind of like behind closed doors. I don't know how he feels about that situation, because I think that situation got ugly within the Rangers organization, how that played out. He was up for the arbitration and then got it granted, and he ended up getting it, but then him and Gorkyov had that spat early on in the season. He never recovered. He's just sitting at home getting paid. I don't think any owner would be uncomfortable with that, even if the pockets are as deep as Dolan's with the Tony D'Angelo situation. Now, granted, we talk about the Panarin situation. Nobody saw that coming with the scandals and all that. Now, if the Rangers – now, see, this situation is different because you're only playing teams within the same division. So you only could play – you don't have a chance to beat up on the weaker teams within the other divisions. It's possible the Rangers probably would not have made the playoffs, but it's also a chance they would. They probably would have been an eighth seed. I looked at it as far as had they not been in the – put it like this: if they were in the division with Toronto, the division with Carolina, not even Carolina, the West, Vegas, like the current point total. I know you're only playing teams within that realm, that pool of teams, but the Rangers were right there points wise with everybody who's in the top four of those divisions. I think, you know, Pittsburgh's division, you know, our division, Pittsburgh, Washington, I think top, you know, I think we had the top heavy, I think top heavy were probably more deep, were better than the West, the North, even in the Central. So I would say the Rangers, if you was to put them in Toronto, in the Canadian division, if you was to put them in the division with Columbus and Detroit, the West with the Sharks and the Ducks, who had terrible seasons, the Kings, I think the Rangers would have probably came out with like maybe close to 70 points. If you put them with this roster, based on how we know how they played, you know, they had to play a gauntlet. And it's unfortunate that they got the short end of the stick. And I know Dolan may not want to agree with that, but I firmly believe, I don't know where y'all guys stand, if the Rangers are in another division currently constructed, I think they make the playoffs in those other divisions. I really do. Let me go back, Glenn, if you could expound on that, feel free. But I want to say this about Chris Drury, and if you want to have any points on what Carl said. Now, Chris Drury, he's the guy who signed Chris Knobloch. He's the guy who's was the head coach for the Hartford Wolfpack, the AHL affiliate in Hartford. So basically, he was responsible for that signing, and that signing took a long time. I don't know if that's going to be a long time for David Quinn. And I don't know what's going to happen. I'm thinking he may not be there. I don't know where you guys stand. So, Glenn, if you give me your thoughts of what's going to happen with the head coach, because you kind of know how this happens with sports. Usually a guy who's the general manager usually gets his guy. I don't know what Chris Drury is thinking. Now, to the other point, Glenn, I thought you had good points as far as the type of players that the Rangers may need to look into, like the Alex Killorn type of guy from Tampa Bay. I was always thinking somebody like, I don't know, the Blues situation with Ryan O'Reilly. They already got a cup. I don't know if they want to rebuild. Tkachuk from Calgary, that type of guy. Matthew Tkachuk.
Yep.
Those type of players would be, I think, will be a piece that will be needed. Tough guys who can score. Physical guys, you can put them on the power play, special team situations. Glenn, what is your thoughts as far as Chris Drury's relationship with Quinn? You think Quinn's going to be gone. What about your thoughts, what you just heard from Carl?
Well, you know, I mean, as far as the Quinn thing goes, remember that Drury had a big hand in getting Quinn hired in the first place because of their connections in Boston. And, you know, their connections before. So in a way, it's different from when, you know, a new GM comes in and cleans house, whereas Quinn is kind of, to a degree, Drury's guy. Now, I mean, some of it may depend on the exit interviews, but from the little bit that I've seen, most of the guys were saying that, you know, they love playing for him. The young guys, Lafreniere in particular, said, yeah, he really helped me out a lot. You know, the other thing that Dolan brought up was a culture problem. I don't know that there was a culture problem. These guys seem to, you know, I mean, you know, we can talk about today, you know, go out and tackle somebody if somebody gives somebody a big hit or something, probably not. But, you know, I thought for a young group, a lot of guys being brought together for the first time, that they were, you know, they were a kind of a cohesive group. They got along well and everything. But, of course, you know, I only see that from the TV screen. But I don't know. I mean, that's going to be interesting to see what happens. You know, to me, I got a feeling Drury's going to give him another year in my gut. But, you know, we'll see what happens. They just had their interviews, exit interviews yesterday, and I think probably by the end of the week we'll know how that's going to pan out. You know, one good point that Carl made, and I had thought about this before too, you know, we brought up, I think I brought up last week, that the Rangers were in the playoffs in the other three divisions from a point standpoint. Mm-hmm. But if we did, you know, we always talk about how this setup was, you know, especially tough for them because, you know, there was only really Buffalo and the Devils who were really bad, and both of them gave them fights. But, you know, you got the top four teams in our group, right? But then you got if Boston was over in the other division, then, like Carl said, Carolina would be back with us. So you probably have Pittsburgh, Washington, the Islanders, and Carolina. And then in the other division, you'd have Toronto, Boston, Tampa, and Florida. So there's a good chance they might not have made the playoffs in a normal format. You know, they would have got to play some of the lesser teams around the league, but so would everybody else. So, you know, that's a hard one to kind of forecast what might have happened. You know, I think, like you said, that, you know, the two Tkachuks were another couple of guys that I would bring up, but there, I don't know if Calgary or Ottawa would let them go under, I mean, you're talking Lafreniere, Kako, those kind of guys to get them. But those, that's another example of, you know, the kind of guys that are hard to get because there aren't that many of them around. You know, I would take, you know, I would take a, you know, some of the guys that we already have on the fourth line, but bigger, you know, guys that can throw their weight around a little bit. You know, I mean, a Rooney, but bigger, a Colin, you know, but a Colin Blackwell, but bigger guys that can, you know, kind of play on the fourth line and make us again, harder to play against. Because Carl made a good point off my points. I mean, I remember J.D. saying after the Carolina series, we need to be harder to play against. And that really wasn't addressed. And as Carl said, too, you know, some of the games against Boston, some of the games against the Islanders, I mean, they were just suffocated. And they couldn't come up with any way to for their talent to overcome that. And that's something that really needs to change for next season if they're going to be successful. They need to – now, I don't know if that's coaching. I don't know if that's the roster. I don't know if that's a player mentality. It's probably a combination of all those things. But they didn't get tougher to play against this year. That probably was the biggest downfall for Gorton and JD, trying to walk that line between, you know, winning and – incorporating a lot of young kids into the lineup. And, you know, again, my expectation, you know, going back to the beginning of the season was, I don't think we're going to make the playoffs. But this season's about developing the kids. You know, I mean, next year it's playoffs or bust. They got to make the playoffs next year. They're at a point in their development right now where they have to address the weaknesses in the roster. They have to get harder to play against, and they have to make the playoffs next year. If they don't make the playoffs next year, it's unacceptable. This year, okay. Next year, unacceptable. And that's how I feel about it.
All right. Well, before we go to Carl, let me ask you this, Glenn. Going back to what you were saying about making the playoffs or not making the playoffs this year, and mm-hmm. why, like you said it before, if we went with the 82-game season, you think the Rangers make the playoffs, right?
Yeah, I mean, I felt that this team was getting to a point before the last 10 games of the season that they were really starting to come together. you know, and I thought they could have gone on the kind of streak that they went on at the end of last season to kind of get in. But, you know, now that I kind of looked at it and I look at the teams that we were talking about, you know, after I satisfied myself that, oh, they would have been in playoffs in the other three divisions as they exist today, you know, I think they would have been in a battle with you know, teams like Florida and, you know, maybe even the Islanders point-wise, maybe Boston. I mean, Boston with all the injuries they had, the goaltending problems that they had, Halak was terrible, and then he was out and all of that. I mean, who knows? You know, another 26 games, who knows if Boston would have been able to hang on long enough? Because I was saying for weeks, I thought Boston was vulnerable. And somehow they kept winning with, you know, injuries out, McAvoy out, Grizzlick out, Halak and Rask out, and somehow they just kept winning. But I thought they were vulnerable. So, you know, again, like I said, I don't know if they would have made the playoffs or not in a regular format, but I thought they were starting to come together before the last 10 games like they did last year. So, you know, again, kind of hard to say what would have happened, but I think they would have been right there. But yeah. What I'm saying, they may not have made the playoffs anyway in a regular structure, thinking of the eight teams that they would have had to be competing against.
Yeah, you know, it comes to a point for James Dolan, whether he took the John Davidson and Gordon letter on his fridge, like we have it on all of our fridges, you know, the letter of rebuild. I think he got tired of it for whatever reason. And a combination of things. I don't know what the main reason is, and that's one I try to get to the bottom of. He just ripped it up. He said, enough is enough. But to say that, Glenn, and Carl's a Knicks fan too, I was shocked. You know, like a lot of Rangers fans were shocked on Twitter. Like, I saw the news on Twitter. Like, I thought it was a bad joke until I started really see the flow. I first saw it on Twitter. Say, what the hell are they talking about? I thought it was just a cheesy bad joke, and it happened to be Nick-like. I was shocked. Carl, I don't know what was your reaction when you first heard of the firing. I don't know how you heard it and what was going through your mind. But going forward with the makeup of this roster, like, where can we improve so we can try to make the playoffs next season, in the full season?
Well, I think about it now. Had the news of those two been getting let go happen today as opposed to last week at this time? Or no, it was last Wednesday when they were both like, had it happened today, would it have been as shocking?
No.
I don't think it would have been as shocking. And thinking
you're
about
right.
I don't know what you guys think. Because I think what happened was – oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I don't know how far back you go, Carl. It reminded me of when Espo fired Michel Bergeron two games before the season ended, and then they wound up losing the two games that were left and get swept by Pittsburgh in the playoffs. I don't know if it was 89 or 90, but that's what it reminded me of when Espo fired Michel Bergeron with two games left. And I mean, my first reaction when I heard the news, I got a notification on my phone, was, when did Dolan start paying attention to us?
Well, Glenn and Steve, it's interesting. When it first happened, I remember I was thinking to myself, I said, boy, Dolan must really be feeling himself over the Knicks right now. he could just, like, sprinkle some dust over the Rangers and all of a sudden, you know, get them on the same path. That's what I was initially thinking. But then, you know, I think what also happened, guys, too, is that we were all still in the whole aftermath of the Wilson situation. Like, all of our focus had from that time that it happened Monday night up until Wednesday, as game day was approaching, we're like, all right, what's gonna happen? Then all of a sudden, middle of the day, you get the news, wait, guys are fired? Wait, what's going on here? And so that kind of was almost added to it. You know, had they both seemed to happen in their own separate day, you know, time periods, we probably could have evaluated and looked at it differently than it happening basically on the same day as, you know, you get the play, you know, the letter comes out, the fine comes out, what's the Ranger response going to be, and then all of a sudden, both guys are fired, basically all in the same day.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
that's
it played
what
itself
yeah.
in. Yeah. And that's the issue that came about. But go ahead, Glenn. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that I think was the shocking part of it, that all of that happened within like a 48-hour period. You know, we had the Wilson thing, we had the outrage about him not getting suspended, we had the letter, you know, and then the firings seemed like a jump to conclusions or just a kind of a spontaneous thing that Dolan just got mad one night and said, oh, I've had enough of this, you know, and you're right. I think if it happened today, after the season ended, we would have been, okay, I guess he's not happy with things, you know. But the excuses that he gave, too, just didn't make sense for it happening when it did. And I think that was the timing of it, you know, wanting to say, well, you know, I wanted Chris Drury to be involved in the exit interviews. Well, he wouldn't have been anyway. it just didn't seem to make a lot of sense. And that's why, you know, when we first came on, I'm like, I'm still confused what was going on in his head when he decided to do that.
Yeah, and I think that's the big factor in that is that it was just, you know, a timing issue. Were they fired on their own merits? I mean, if I sat down and took the time, I probably could make a case for them being let go, because you really have two factors now that are going to be coming into play going into next season. One, if you keep the coach, right, you're basically saying – And I thought about it. I thought it was going to happen 10 games into this season. I thought he was going to get let go the way things were trending, but it didn't happen. You're basically letting Quinn hang out there next season, 21-22, when the season starts. And basically it says, okay, if by the quarter mark of the season things aren't going well, you're just going to, you know, 86 him anyway. Well, then what's the point of bringing him back? That part, mm-hmm. I can't – if you're going to make that change, then you may as well make it now. Save yourself the time of having the coach basically have to look over his shoulder or fretting about his job every single night from the time training camp starts in September. I'm not a fan of that at all. Like, just, you know what, just cut your losses at that point. The other thing, too, is that, okay, so we're talking about this rebuilding. What happens if they don't make the playoffs next season? How do we then evaluate this entire process? Because at that point now, it would have been four and a half seasons, if you count the letter, 4.5 seasons mm-hmm. into this process, no postseason, players that are, you know, 29, 30, 31 years old, taking up enormous amounts of cap space on this team, and the results are not translating into what we believe should be expected. Like, what? I think that question has to be asked and answered in some fashion, because that would be lingering over how the entire roster is constructed next season, and the results of this, they don't go the way we are expecting. Because as Glenn just mentioned, you know, that if you that top eight right there between Toronto, Pittsburgh, Washington, Boston, the Islanders, Carolina, Tampa Bay, and Florida, if nothing dramatic happens with any of those eight teams, the Rangers have to somehow, even within their own division, figure out a way to leapfrog one of those teams that are in their division if they go back to the regular format next season. And if that mm-hmm. doesn't happen, well, then where does that leave us?
I will partially say this. And this goes back to a lot of the games we talked about after the game, Glenn, throughout the season, since January. I really believe the veterans kind of left this franchise hanging, man. Like, the veterans, in my opinion, were the ones who got off to the slow start, the Mika Zibanejads. Panarin was kind of, you know, he was doing the job. But the Chris Kreiders, those type of guys weren't getting the production. Lafreniere, you know, he's a rookie, and he's come around. You know, I thought he had if you want to call it a second half of the season, I thought he played very well. Cackle skated well, but it was really early on in January when the veterans dropped the ball. Because how many times, Glenn, we've said it, maybe a 2 to 3 straight week span where we said, man, if we could get something from the veterans, we would be doing good. Because the young guys seem to be on it. Adam Fox has played fantastic. He's probably going to be up for a lot of defenseman awards. Keandre Miller, I think, surprised a lot of people, not me. But we talk about with Colin Blackwell, you know, they added a plug-and-play guy, you know, piece him into mm-hmm. the lineup. He skates hard. But we were looking at it for, like, the first – and that's what the season was lost. You didn't have time to make up ground. And I think that's the point Glenn was saying, is, like, we had more games, we were in our stride, cool. But then remember, Philip Hedel was out. Remember, he got hit in the Pittsburgh game. I thought that set us back a little bit, too, because then you had the line shuffle. So it's just these unfortunate circumstances. But it's not like the. I don't think Quinn should be on the hook for not developing players. I'm looking at it more. Could we get our veterans off to a strong start and through and through? And I think if we did that and we're relatively healthy, then, yeah, I think we probably would make the playoffs. But that's a lot of ifs, but the veterans didn't do their job early on. That's how I see it. What's your thoughts on that, Carl, and then Glenn?
Well, the thing about the veterans, and that begs the question, do we have the right veterans? Like, do we have
that's
the
tough.
Right mix of players here to get this done? And if we're going to be constantly disappointed or feeling as if there is an underperformance, you know, like, for instance, like Chris Kreider, you know, nothing against him, you know, personally. I'm sure he's a really good guy, but, man, there's something about his game that just irks me for the last, like, 5 years. It just does. I'm sorry. I'm you know, his stat line at the end of the season looks like it's halfway decent, but, man, I feel like I'm being let down in some fashion. But if that's
fair
part
enough.
Of the issue, in that when you're constructing the roster going forward, it's like, okay, Is the person that needs to be added to this team part of the top six? Because who are you taking out of that mix if the player that is really sort of needed to be injected into this roster somewhere in that top tier, who are you taking out to replace him with?
That's a fair point. I mean, nobody's not untouchable. But let me ask you this, Carl and Glenn. Let me ask you after both at the same time. After this season alone, what's your thoughts on – okay, Kreider. I'll throw the names out. Kreider, Buchnevich. What's your thoughts on those two guys alone? What you saw from this season?
Did you say Carl, then Glenn?
yeah, Carl.
Or you want me to go?
Let me go to Glenn.
Yeah.
Hey, we'll go to Carl. And we go to Glenn after that. Carl, what's your thoughts on Kreider and Buchnevich after what you saw in 2021? Is he there?
Oh, did we lose him?
Oh, I don't know. He's there. I don't know what's going on.
I'll go back. Well, you know, I mean, we did talk early in the season how it was the kids and you know, guys like Blackwell and Rooney who were scoring the big goals, and you know, it just wasn't enough, and we were waiting for the vets to come. Now, Zibanejad admitted today that, you know, it was the COVID pretty much all along early in the season. I mean, he came back and he was better than a point per game player, you know, again, on one of those, like, 20 goals in 24 games streaks at the end of the season. So, I mean, I think Mika's going to be fine. I think Mika's a top center in the league. Kreider, we talked about, if they knew that they were going to get Lafreniere in the draft, I don't think they would have signed Kreider at the end of last year. I think they would have moved him. There was enough discussion about whether or not they should sign him anyway. And at this point, when you look at the top six, he's a third-line left wing, making $7 million, $6.5 million, whatever it is, for the next 6 years. That's a tough one to swallow. But he's a third-line. If he's not going to do what we need him to do, then he's a third-line left wing. You know, when we talked, we've talked for weeks about this too, Steve, that we got more talented players than we have spots on the roster. Carl, like, was starting to say, who's going to come out in the top six? Well, I don't know who's going to come out in the top six. And I think, and I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, that some names that we've gotten familiar with or some names that we've heard coming up or, you know, maybe just saw an inkling of, like Zach Jones or something, these guys might wind up getting moved for the parts that this team needs structurally. You know, could I see a Buchnevich being part of a trade? I could. I mean, I'd hate to see it happen because they've spent 5 years developing him to become the player he is now. So I would hate to see him go. And he's got a little bit of a snarl to him, too, he's developed. So good for him. But,
right.
You know, could he go?
Kudos to
could
him.
Could
Beagle
go?
Kudos to him in last
absolutely.
Week, showing his toughness.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a little bit of a bite to him now, too. He doesn't take any crap. So I would
right.
hate to see him go. But he might be somebody that needs to go to get what this team needs. I mean, they got a few games to look at Zach Jones and, you know, some of the other younger players. I mean, we got a ton of defensemen. Is Zach Jones going to have a spot on this team, especially with Lundqvist coming? Or maybe Lundqvist is an asset that gets moved. Some of the names that we've heard and we've seen play on this team, you know, might wind up playing somebody else. I mean, I don't think, you know, Lafreniere and Kako. I saw enough of Kraftoff to think I'd like to keep him around too. But, you know, if the right deal comes along, then they have to move him. They've got a lot of talent. They've got some weaknesses on this team that need to be addressed. They've got talent that people around the league would be interested in. And I think we're going to see some guys move, some guys that may bother us that they're being moved. Some names that we've gotten familiar with and thought were going to be part of this get moved. But I think that's where we are now. And that's why, again, I was kind of surprised by the moves, because I felt that Gorton and JD were going to do those things this offseason. And for whatever reason, I don't know what kind of conversations Dolan might have had with JD to make him think differently. But I think this is going to be a very eventful summer as far as bodies moving in and out to kind of complete the rebuild, if you want to call it that, if we're not there already, but kind of, you know, put the finishing touches on what this team is going to be for the next few years. So I think it's going to be – we have a lot to talk about when we come back in September, Steve.
Oh, no, we'll be in the offseason. We'll be on every other week, you know, talking
right.
hockey, get to all the moves. Yeah,
cool.
Of course. Hey, Carl, are you back with us?
Yeah, my phone had cut out there for about a minute or two, so I didn't get a chance to hear until Glenn made a good couple of great points here in this last minute and change.
I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead, Carl.
We have been talking early in the year that we got too many guys, too much talent for the spots we have, and guys are going to have to be moved. So I'm interested to hear, you know, what you think about that, who you think might be moved.
Yeah, that's part of the issue that exists, is that we are sort of in a holistic way saying we have a whole lot of talent, but there's only you can only put 12 guys and 6 defensemen on the ice each night. You know, unfortunately, they're as they say in some other sports, they're not all going to make it, right? So you then have to then sort of make an evaluation of saying, okay, these are the guys that are going to be our anchors in this core, quote unquote, that we are going to have going forward. We've seen it in the past, you know, in the, like I said, in the hard salary cap era, the Penguins had Crosby, Malkin, Letang. Everybody else kind of just fit in where they fit in. The Blackhawks had Taves, Kane, Heath, mixed in guys here and there between your Sharps and your Sods and Seabrooks and so on. And guys, after a while, sort of, you know, they had to make things work. Who are the Rangers guys that are going to be part, that they have to evaluate and say, okay, these 4 players or these 3 players, or these 5 players maybe, are going to be the drivers of the bus. And I think right now the Rangers cannot, whether it's JD, whether it's Gorton, if I had posed that, and even Drury now that he's in this position, if I posed to them that question, I fear that they can't give me the right answer to that question. And because they can't right now, that we're sort of stuck in neutral, because as you look at the roster, there's almost like there's 2 wings of the roster, right? There is the Zibanejad, Panarin, Kreider, Trouba wing, guys that range right now between 27 and 30 years old. And then you have a second wing, the Millers, Fox, Kakos, Lafreniere, that range between 19 and 23 years old. Well, the problem with that mix right there is that by the time you think you are a contender, quote-unquote, however you want to define that as, the guys in the first tier that I just mentioned are going to be in their, what, 30 and in their 30 plus year age range, which at that point you're already setting up to get diminishing returns, but you're paying them high salaries as it is. And they're on the roster, if I'm looking at this correctly, those four guys are signed, except with the exception of Zibanejad, through the year 2026. Well, that's a big issue if the salary cap is not going to accelerate at any real pace. The cap has been sort of flat basically for about the last like 5 years. This is not going to work if we have, you know, if we're not getting the beauty of those two teams I mentioned, Pittsburgh and Chicago, is that those teams won when their star players were basically making peanuts. You know, Crosby was 21, Kane was 21, Taves was 22. You know, I'm not totally sure if the Rangers are going to be in that position when they win the title, that their guys are going to be in that age range, or at least the players that the Rangers are expecting to be their best players. I don't see that, and that's part of the problem. So you almost have to make a choice. Are we going to go with the younger wing and say, listen, these guys here, we're going to have to make a choice at some point by the end of next season. Are we going to fish or cut bait and just let these young guys ride us to the promised land?
That's a fair point. Yeah, hey, guys, we're almost out of time real quick. Hold on. Let's get some final thoughts. Glenn, if you want to respond to that and give us your final thoughts, and then go back to Carl and get his final thoughts as well, so we can get it out before time runs out.
Yeah, I was just going to comment on what Carl said. I mean, he's absolutely right. We got guys that are going to be a little bit older, and we're going to have to start paying these kids before 2026. Fox, Kako, Lafreniere, obviously. You know, then what are we going to do? We can't lose those guys. You know, I mean, the point he made about Pittsburgh is perfect. I mean, I've said this about Pittsburgh for years. Crosby, Malkin, Letang, and a bunch of guys. you know, and just interchangeable guys that play the right role on the team. You know, that's what this team is going to have to figure out. Like you said, who is going to be the core of this team for the next 5 to 7 years? You know, then the other guys are going to have to get moved for the proper pieces to make this work. So, again, you're right. I mean, I can sit here and say who I think those guys are. Carl can, you can, Steve. I don't know if that decision has been made. I mean, I don't think they would trade Kako, but if the right deal came along, would they? I can't say for sure that they wouldn't. So I don't know that they, you know, maybe they have, but I don't know, especially with the new management, that they've identified who that core is going to be for the next 5 to 7 years. So, you know, we'll have to see what they happen. And obviously be very a big part of that is going to be what they do with Zibanejad. You know, are they going to extend him over the summer, or are they going to let him play out? And if they let him play out, then I think the thinking is probably after that to let him go, which, you know, I hate to say. I love the guy. But they're going to have to figure out who's going to fill that role. I don't want Eichel. I've never really liked his attitude. I don't feel like he's a winning team first player. That's just my opinion. And now with this neck injury, that could be something that lingers for the rest of his career if it's not handled correctly. I don't want to see them give a bunch of guys to Buffalo and then also include Zibanejad in that deal if they take Eichel and let Zibanejad go, because then you're talking about, you know, he's part of it too. I'm not interested in Eichel. I'd rather see them look somewhere else. I think I saw Barkov is a free agent after next year. Let's see if Florida can come up with the money to pay him. I would look for somebody else. I don't really want Eichel to be here, to be honest. So we'll see how that works out.
All right, man. Glenn NYR on Twitter, man. Thank you, dude. Carl, give us your final thoughts. We got about, let me see, about 30 seconds we have before we get cut off.
Oh, yeah, no problem. I think next season just has to be the sort of, like, moving season. I guess the best way I can put it, like in golf, like Saturday is moving day. Like, next season has to be the year where you make the decision to decide, okay, where do you want to go? Because the fear is that you say you're building, but that never ends, right? Like you, that there has to be an end date to that. Otherwise, you just are keep pushing it off and pushing it off and pushing it off. And then at that point, you're not getting any returns at all. So the Rangers have to make a decision. And I think, you know what, right now is pretty much the perfect time to say, okay, where are we? Where are we going? Let's make these decisions that we need to make and push forward.
All right. And shout-outs to Carl. Shout-outs to Glenn. Great discussion. We'll be back in 2 weeks. So that will mean sometime during the NHL playoffs, we'll talk about that, any moves our squad makes, anything around the league. Expansion draft is in July, so we'll definitely get into all that stuff for the Seattle Kraken throughout the summer. For Glenn, for Carl, for RP, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, the whole shebang. And Carl, I know you're getting ready for the NFL schedule release. Look forward to your thoughts on that when we do our episode on Thursday. And Glenn, of course, we'll be on every other week, like with all of our teams. When it's the off season for the teams, we're on every other week. So we'll be on in 2 weeks, right before the holiday for the new shirts and for the NHL.
Yeah, appreciate the time, gentlemen. Yep,
thank you,
Steve.
Thank you,
Carl.
And thank you, Glenn.
Lee Blue. Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Can you dig it? Blee Blue, 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 Blee Blue.